Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. Each week, we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. This week, our subject is theology. The question, has the smoke of woke entered the church? Now, to help us answer that question, we welcome our distinguished panel of experts, philosopher Mother and author of End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. That's Carrie Gress. And she joins us today from Virginia. Welcome, Carrie. We also have a pastor from the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., well known to all of us, and author of a new book, The Hell There Is, an exploration of an often rejected doctrine of the church, Monsignor Charles Pope. Welcome, Monsignor. Thanks. And as always, we have EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. He joins us in our theology studio. Welcome, panel. It's great to have you here on the Catholic Sphere. So, as you know, Colin, we did a little play on the smoke of woke as playing off on something that Paul VI said many years ago having to do with Satan. Why don't you give us an overview of what that was?
Sure. He apparently wrote in 1972 in a letter, which was later uncovered by the member of the papal household responsible for collecting his letters after his death, he lamented that the smoke of Satan had entered as if through a crack into the church. And he described it in very specific terms that it's sometimes used for purposes in justifying things which, or accusing people of things which are not intended by his statement. But he wrote that doubt, uncertainty, problems, unrest, disaffection, and confrontation is what the church is encountering. It's no longer trusted. We trust the first pagan prophet we see who speaks to us in some newspaper, and we run behind him and ask him if he is the formula for true life. I repeat, doubt has entered our conscience, and it entered through the windows that should have been opened to the light. And it's interesting that he's referring to the windows that Pope John 23rd said the Second Vatican Council was intended to sort of open the windows to the world. And he's saying the world came in. But the point of the Pope, of course, both popes, would have been that the opening to the world was, as John put it in his opening address to the council, that the light of the church is truth. The splendor of the truth shine forth more greatly. And this is certainly part of the lament that that was not seeming to occur. But more importantly, he ends it when he says, entered through windows that should have been opened to the light, he says science. And science means something very specific to the church. It's an intellectual virtue, knowledge, by which we know the truth in all kinds of ways, philosophically, theologically, as well as the natural sciences. And only by integrating those things do we really have a solid view of the truth. So he wasn't speaking of the natural sciences per se, but speaking of a deep understanding of the world and its realities, such as the church has carried down through the centuries.
Right. And Carrie, let me ask you, we've kind of had a situation where in the world for a while, it seemed like the church awoke and it was woke. We kind of came out of things and started seeing changes in society. And in some ways, it seems like some of that is being pulled back. But sometimes it seems that the church is a late adapter to these things and holds on to them longer than actually when the culture kind of changes. What's your take?
No, I think it's really remarkable to see this pendulum swinging. But the one place that I'm seeing it significantly is certainly in the arena of feminism. It seems like the rest of the world has sort of moved on from it, and Catholics are just sort of hanging on to it in a way that I think is incredibly unhealthy. But there seems to be kind of this sense of keeping up with the culture, that I think Catholics are kind of enamored with the culture in a way that they, isn't always healthy. And I think that, one way we can navigate around this is by really understanding what it was that brought this understanding of science that Paul VI was describing, and help us understand how it is that that has created so many problems for us, because it was a very specific kind of rationalism that entered into the philosophical mainstream. And that's fundamentally what it is that we're dealing with today is, you know, Descartes' idea of doubt instead of faith. And that was the real revolution that happened with the Enlightenment. And, you know, I think this is something that we need to still address philosophically and certainly theologically.
So, Monsignor, as a parish priest dealing with the people coming to your parish, how do you see and how have you seen the impact, let's say, of this wokeness in the culture? Has it impacted, you know, your parish and the practice of the faith, at least of some of the people attending and the parishioners?
You know, I think that one of the sad things, and I suppose it's probably always been true, but that people are much more passionate about their politics and their culture than they are about their faith. And so if some singer said it must be true, or if my party says I got to be pro-abortion, so I am, and don't bring that other politics in. And so there's a kind of a reversal of what should be the case, which is that people should be judging the world by the gospel. But we end up judging the scriptures or the gospel by the world standards. And so therefore, yeah, we've got a bunch of cynics and people who are largely dubious, as Carrie mentioned, you know, of the faith, rather. There's a kind of a hermeneutic of doubt, you know, a kind of a malaise that's come upon. And I think the other thing we have to do, going back to some of the introduction Colin made, was to remember that, unfortunately, a lot of the changes in the church that took place after the council took place in the middle of a cultural revolution that had swept into the West. What I think a lot of people in America don't know is that Europe was in trouble long before we were. It's an interesting thing. As C.S. Lewis wrote in 1948, he said, you know, he says, I wish, some people say Europe has gone back to being pagan. He says, I wish that were true. He says, at least the pagans believed in something. He says, but ancient Europe was a virgin awaiting her husband, but modern Europe is an angry divorcee. And that was in 1947 or 48 that he wrote that. Things were tough in Europe. You know, our parishes and things were packed through the 50s and into the early 60s, but Europe was already in serious trouble. And then, of course, the revolution reached the American shores, and most of us know what's happened since the 1960s.
Well, since you brought up politics and you mentioned it, identity politics was an important part of kind of the woke culture. And how did you see that impacting, let's say, maybe different ministries in the church?
Yeah, well, I think what identity politics was especially heavy in the area of what the world calls LGBTQIA issues, there's a very strong, you know, political ideology that's backing up this, you know, what should be again a moral issue, and also the same is true, I think, with race, and I think those are the two main areas. Not to say they're on others, but yeah, there's a sort of idea. And the saddest thing about it is that it's mostly focused on negative things, like I'm a victim. And somehow that makes a person a hero or someone really special that should be paid special attention to. So it's kind of tied in with victimology, this identity politics. And they go to the politics to sort of remedy what they see as a grievance. So there's grievance culture, identity politics, there's victimology. I could go on and on. I'm talking too much, but it's a mess.
No, that's perfectly. Well, let me ask you, Carrie, to pick up on that whole idea of and seeing that as a laywoman, that where you would say, you know, women are considered a minority, even though women are actually a majority of people.
Yep.
And you're kind of dealing in this world, as the Monsignor alluded to, this kind of victimization and the idea of, you know, intersectionality, which kind of looks for who's got the highest level of victimhood.
Right. I think this is a fascinating question because victims have status in the culture today that they have not had in any other culture ever before. The philosopher René Girard has talked about this extensively and pointed that out. But I think the roots of it are long and historically deep. I think started actually when the early feminists started comparing themselves to slavery, and they made themselves these victims and gave them a kind of status that allowed them to be entitled to something. And that actually spread. I mean, this is where woke comes from. It spread later in the 50s and 60s. The gay movement picked up on it and realized that they too could get this special kind of legal status and privilege with it. And from there, it's just spun out in all these various different directions. And the saddest part about it, though, is that the victim mentality, it's not something that people are focused on healing. It's actually something they want to exacerbate. And I saw this also early in the feminist movement, was this idea of churning up in the hearts of women a real anger, what was called the gospel of discontent. So literally trying to make women angry, because when people are angry, they're much more involved politically. They're much more inclined to go and try to make change. So we see that it's one of these efforts that just keeps spiraling into something bigger and bigger and uglier, because it isn't fundamentally trying to heal anything or to bring people to a better place.
Well, let me ask you, Colin, certainly inside the church, here's the church, Mother Church, as Carrie talked about, healing. That's what the church is trying to do. And so when you've got people who say, I remember one priest used to call them the pain and anguish group, at every one of the local meetings, we're always the ones suffering the most, we're the ones who got the most attention. But that idea that, of course, the church is going to react and want to help those people, but sometimes it does seem like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It does. And the church has the means of healing, but people don't want those means. I think what Father quoted C.S. Lewis really describes it. And Carrie, mentioned that as well. This anger that permeates a lot of it. We see it on our streets whenever there's some political stirring and protesting and so on. And so the idea also too has entered the church in this sense that we figure that political action within the church can change things to agree with what the culture and what the academics in the culture believe to be true. Whereas, as Pope St. Paul VI said, and Karol Wojtyła, who would become John Paul II later, said, the only way to oppose this is with the truth. And he wrote the beautiful encyclical, The Splendor of the Truth, delineating this unity of knowledge, this science, as it were, which is healing. The church has essentially two forms of healing. It has the healing that grace gives, that we get through the sacraments and through the sacramental ministry of the church, but it has this deposit of the faith, the wealth of faith and the teaching tradition and the unification of knowledge that our intellectual tradition has, which actually can heal the intellect itself. But people aren't listening. They don't want that because it's contrary, as both Carrie and Monsignor have said, to what their own personal goals and desires are. And so that personal egocentric goal and desire has become the principal thing. And of course, part of that is it's a bit of a despair of something beyond this world, frankly.
Right, and let me ask you about that, Monsignor, because you talk about preternatural and what we're dealing with in the church today. Talk more about that.
Yeah, well, getting back to the quote from Pope Paul VI that kind of framed this discussion. I think we have to say that it's hard to look at the church in the last 100 and some years and not conclude that there isn't some preternatural enemy afoot. We human beings can mess stuff up pretty fast, but I mean, it's astonishing when you look at just the almost total collapse of faith in the West. And it wasn't that long ago, just a couple generations ago, that many of these places, especially here in America, even in my own brief lifetime, I'm in my mid-60s, and I remember the seminaries were packed. If you didn't get to church on time, you were going to be standing in the back. I mean, we had to get tickets for midnight mass. There was a waiting list for the school. On and on I could go. I mean, all the numbers were amazing, just almost astonishing. The immigrant church it was an amazing, amazing thing. And then to see just the almost complete collapse of things, closing of so many churches, 90 to 100 churches in some dioceses have closed. And I could go on with the statistics, but it's not only that, but that while all this has been going on, we just seem to be business as usual and just kind of, the church seems to be largely asleep.
Well, let me ask you that. Yeah, you said that, and you talk about the church in the West being largely asleep as the center, the cancer metastasizes within it. You talk about something, I don't know if it pronounces, Thanatos syndrome. What is that?
Well, Thanatos syndrome is rooted in the Greek word for death. And it's based on a Walker Percy novel that was written way back in the 60s or earlier. But it basically describes, though, when a group, not just a person, but when a group is dying, it goes through stages. And one of them, of course, is denial and other things we try to substitute and so on. So in the church, we are acting as if we still had 85% of Catholics at Mass and we had their loyalty. And that we've communicated the faith, but that's just not the reality anymore. And I don't know that I have a silver bullet to just fix it all, but it's amazing how little urgency there is in the church. Now, in my own diocese, we're laying off employees at the chancery and other things, and yet no one is linking this to a loss of faith. No one wants to teach and say, well, what's happened that we could once sustain these things and now we can't? And this goes on with school closings, just any number of things. And as I say, we kind of sweep it under the rug real quick and try not to look at it. So what I mean by Thanatos syndrome would be that kind of something strange is afoot, but we don't seem to realize that we're at war with the devil and we're in a war for souls, and we're just kind of laid back about it.
Right, we're not analyzing exactly what the cause of what is going on maybe around us as things fall apart. We're misdiagnosing it.
Turn off the light.
Right. And as Colin alluded to, in a lot of cases, because we don't like the answers that the church offers itself for one of those things. Well, let me ask you that, Carrie, too, with that kind of woke thing in the Catholic school system, let's say, in a local parish, where, you know, even on one level you could say that impact of, you know, we want to be pastoral, but, you know, speak the truth in love, but we're supposed to speak the truth. You know, sometimes you hear, well, you can't talk about abortion, you can't talk about this, you can't talk about that, because, you know, it seems like we're more worried about what the surveys of people say about your parish than on teaching the truth.
Yeah, you know, I think it has again, going back to the roots of this Thanatos syndrome, I think comes from really a Marxist ideology. I did some amazing research into an Italian philosopher named Augusto Del Noce. And Del Noce's writing in the 70s, and he's looking around saying, you know, we've just been through these two world wars. We have seen the revolutions all over. He says something about this ideology isn't finished yet. What's going on here? And he recognizes that, you know, what he's looking for is another outcropping of it, but he knows it's not going to come in the same violent way that it came under Nazism or under the Soviet gulags and whatnot. And so he's looking around and he's seeing the reality is the sexual revolution. This is really what I think has blown things up and why things have changed so dramatically. But the sexual revolution wasn't something that just happened spontaneously. It was really something planned and actually thought of. There was a book about it by one of the Frankfurt thinkers in 1936 called The Sexual Revolution. And the idea was, if you get people disconnected from the church, if you can get them to believe that any of the structures of the family and, you know, fatherhood, motherhood, all of that, anything connected to the church and tradition, if people are told that all of that is really oppressive and that in order to really be free, you have to get rid of that. And that's really what's going to usher in a new kind of peace, because you're going to have all these people who are contented. And that obviously has not been what we've seen at all. But I think this is really the fallout from what we're seeing, is that whole era of, you know, people being told they're repressed. And, you know, it's just wreaked havoc on everyone. And certainly the unborn and the family and the church. And the wild thing, though, is that people are really hungry for the truth. And you see a real flourishing happening in those places where people are being told the truth. They're not being given this, you know, notion that they can just do whatever it is that they want. But you have to know that exists, and you have to be able to find that. And I think that's the real struggle. And you also, I think we need to do a better job of affirming those that are willing to stick their necks out. Because a lot of times it can be incredibly painful, and there's a lot of persecution on all kinds of levels that happens. And that's one of the things that as laity we can do to start shoring up the truth being told in our communities.
Right. And also be good, as the Monsignor alluded to, if some of those people who did stand up also got the support inside the church at the same time. Now, Colin, that whole idea of freedom and the true understanding of freedom from the church's perspective, as opposed to this idea that, well, if everything goes, everything's terrific, I did it my way, I'm going to be happy, You know, the old joke about a Puritan is somebody who is concerned that somewhere somebody's having a good time. This is kind of the puritanical aspect of the Catholic Church. But we've seen a lot of those changes, not only in our own church, but we'd have to say that most of the mainline churches are incredibly woke, and that hasn't played out very well.
No, it really hasn't. But in many ways, and I think we've all alluded to this in some way, it's almost like an end stage of an ideology. And I think there's another quote that could be brought to bear here, and that is Pope John Paul II, also as Cardinal Wojtyla, noted that we are in the final confrontation between the church and the anti-church, the gospel and the anti-gospel. And so I think we're seeing that today. The previous Pope, Pope Francis, talked about, this war almost as if against God the Father, this rebellion against nature. And I think that's really what we've seen with the sexual revolution as it's progressed through its various stages of self-destruction, and now we're at gender ideology and all of the destruction of individuals that goes with that. It seems like a veritable war against the Creator and the order of the universe that He established, and the implications of that for human beings and human family and human society. And so in some ways, I think it's representative of this end stage that the Monsignor noted too, that the metastasis is very deep. And how we go to get out of it, I don't know that there's a medicine that will treat it, but God has the medicine if we will just return to Him and ask Him to apply it to us.
Well, also, let me ask you, Monsignor, talking about obviously the people who have left the church. Sometimes I wonder, you know, it seems like the church is highly focused and appropriately in many ways on immigrants and welcoming people from South America, other parts of the world. They've revitalized, you know, the Vietnamese, et cetera. Hispanics, obviously, sometimes from Africa, some of the most vital members of the church, Korea, can come from those groups. But at the same time, it does make you wonder, well, what happened to the people who used to go there? Shouldn't we be asking that question about where they went? And are we just content with saying, well, they left, but we got some new people here, and that keeps the numbers up?
Yeah, that is a danger because, you know, every soul ultimately matters, doesn't it? Even from my crazy generation, the baby boomers, we're the ones who kind of threw the revolution. We threw everything out. It was a terrible time of iconoclasm in the church. And I think we left so little for young people today to build on. But I will say, with that in mind, that there's a lot of signs of renewal all throughout the church. And I'm sure there always are, even in the darkest periods. But I mean, I'm very encouraged by I guess most young adults don't go to any church, but those who do come and come to the Catholic Church, they're very pious. They love adoration. They get to confession in great numbers. They really put the older folks to shame. Likewise, again, there's a great sign of renewal in, there's a lot of different movements and groups within the church. And I would add the traditional Latin Mass has been a sign of great renewal. And that was strangely persecuted.
Right.
And that's just a very strange phenomenon, you know, this dangerous thing, the mass that we went to for 1,500 years.
Well, let me ask you, why do you think that? Is it because its popularity runs counter to what the mainline thinking of the progressives in the church have and what they expected to happen?
I think that's really mainly it. It sort of puts to the lie a lot of the stuff they said that was irrelevant, and we had to be more relevant. It focuses much more, the Latin Mass on less on the social gospel. There's no reason it should, but it's really fundamentally about the worship of God rather than the aware gathered community. And I think those who were a big part of the renewal, and they had their reasons. These were not bad, evil people.
Right.
I think they did think that maybe the laity were largely forgotten out there in the pews, and it was really time to engage them more fully in the liturgy and put more things in the vernacular, especially the readings and so on. I get it. But a lot of it became, though, I think, something of a cudgel more than something to really reach out and include the faithful more. And if anyone tried to do anything older or traditional, it was taken with great aplomb. Like, oh my gosh, you're trying to turn back the clock. And so there's something of a fear based on that. And again, I can only say that there's something bigger afoot that we have to keep remembering, the smoke of Satan.
Right.
And as Satan is turning these things and these divisions that we have and trying to get us to hate each other inside the church. Right. And so it's a tragic time in many ways.
Stoking the flames, as they would say. So, Carrie, let me ask you, in your experience in a parish with the situation where, to some degree, you get these younger people coming in, acting maybe a little more pious, and some of that is looked at a little negatively sometimes from us older baby boomers. I don't know whether it's because we feel guilty about how we've let things go, or you remind me that maybe things I should be doing. What's your take?
You know, it's really interesting time because it was just this recently in the last few weeks that the Free Press actually published an article about how Catholicism became cool. Mm-hmm. And this is something, you know, it's kind of the ultimate form of rebellion in the culture today. And this is something that I have thought about for a long time. You know, I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, you know, the marijuana capital of the world, and thought, I'm doing the most rebellious thing ever by becoming a Catholic in my 20s. But this was obviously a very long time ago. But I think that that's sort of it, is that the younger generation has been told and given everything. They've been told they can do whatever they want. They've been given everything. They're materially, you know, not in need of really anything. And so I think they've realized what they're missing is a sense of story, a sense of mystery, a sense of the thou, of the divine. Cool. And that's really what they want. And this is why things like the traditional Latin Mass are drawing them in, because they want a sense of mystery and meaning. And that's what those things are providing in spades. And so it's probably very disconcerting for those of the older generations who, you know, were told we have to get rid of these things or saw good reasons to get rid of them, or this is what was happening in the church. But I think that it's incredibly heartening to see these younger families in particular, and also to see that they're actually having children too. I think that that's another important aspect of it, is to see that this, you know, the cradle is going to be the one that's going to determine the future. And all of these families are working hard to raise beautiful and holy families. Mm-hmm. And that feels like something new also. And so it's really a rebellion of all the things that we've been told were going to make us happy, because ultimately these younger generations have realized this isn't working. My parents aren't happy. My grandparents aren't happy. Want something deeper, and I want my life to have real meaning.
Yeah, I guess as Monsignor says, something else is going on underneath it all.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. So let me thank my panel, Carrie, Monsignor Pope, and Colin Donovan for being with us for this delightful discussion. And thank you all for joining us. And don't forget to join us next week. The host will be Ryan Penny. He'll be discussing Catholics on social media. That's right here on the Catholic Sphere on EWTN. We'll see you